dance on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dance on the air. We're back, we're dance on the air.
Hello and welcome to Dads on the Air, the world's longest running radio program on father's issues. We broadcast to you from Sydney, Australia and can be heard live around the world via the live streaming from our studio here at 2DLF in Sydney. And of course, all our programs can be accessed on our website at www.dadsontheair.net. My name's Peter Vandervoort and in the studio with me today we have Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yeah, good morning, Peter, and good morning, listeners. And it's great to be here, I've got to say.
It's great to still see you here, mate.
Well, mate, they can't get rid of me. Someone's got to keep this seat warm and twiddle all the knobs so you can...
You're the best at that.
Your pearls of wisdom can go out on the airwaves and, you know, keep helping people out, all those dads out there who rely on the good advice that... actually, had somebody last night, a father called Simon, say that dads in the air is a like a voice in the dark. That's what he described us as, and I felt very flattered to be part of something that is helping on a practical way men out there who are going through, he's going through a shocking marriage breakup, and there's a little boy involved, and he's going through the usual tragedy that many men have to go, and women, of course. It's, I mean, it's not, yes, no better for the women, but of course, being dads on the air, we do tend to take the father's point of view whenever we can. Yeah, but Simon, if you're listening, mate, good morning to you, and we here at Dads on the Air are all batting for you.
Good to have you with us, Simon, and also in the studio, of course, we have Ray Lenton from Dads in Distress.
Good morning, fellas. How are you? Good morning, folks.
Good to have you here, Ray. We've got a special program for you this morning. We're going to speak with a few of the many mothers who have been dispossessed of their children by their ex-partners, making use of the same laws and various means on offer by which so many men have been dispossessed of their children. And I'm speaking, of course, of the family justice system supported by legislation which appears to be designed to pander to the wishes of the most dysfunctional of a child's parents, and which can be so easily manipulated by a malicious, vengeful ex-partner in order to deny a child the right to love and be loved by both responsible parents. And unfortunately, this often stays there for life. Somehow our elected representatives have been led to believe that it's politically safe to ignore this issue, as it's mostly men who are removed from their children's lives, and they consider that men will never harness enough public sympathy in order to change public opinion. This view, of course, is bolstered by the continuous stream of unchallenged misinformation produced by an ever-growing domestic violence industry, which openly promotes the false notion that only men are perpetrators of domestic violence. Well, as it so happens, more and more mothers are falling victims to these appallingly inadequate laws and their administration, as more and more men are resorting to the same tactics used by so many women in order to gain sole custody of the children. It's easy to do, and without doubt, it's the worst possible outcome for the children. Personally, I'm of the view that we have unwittingly allowed a gender divide to take root, which underpins the whole sorry debate around how we administer family justice, not only in Australia but around the world. And nowhere is this more evident than in the way we award primary custody to one or other of the parents. This means, in effect, one of the parents is given the green light to make hostages of the children if they wish to do so. And this single most destructive concept, I believe, is the root cause of all that is evil in the administration of family justice. And unless this is addressed in a fair and just manner, with both parents obtaining the legal right to be an equal primary care parent, who each have an equal right to share a near equal percentage of primary care parenting time, then I'm afraid nothing's going to happen.
And the reason, of course, for the sexual bias is the fact that in the past, most custody has been settled in favour of the mother. Traditionally, it was the mother. This is why it does appear that there is a feminist or... this is why if it was equally that the man was to get, you know, custody,
yep,
in these situations, we wouldn't have this sexist situation that we find ourselves confronting.
But maybe we put ourselves in that position because we
exactly.
I don't think
exactly.
we've been lured into,
yep,
this gender war.
It comes back to that bigger picture, though, Ian, as well, in that, you know, how at a young age, as I come into a marriage, how do I buy a house? How do I functionally work, keep my family in financial security? We live in a culture. You can't take it off. It's not a coat. And so our culture teaches us that their primary responsibility is around the financial security of our families, and we set our families up that way. When we get there, often we don't like what we get.
Yeah.
Often. We look around. I certainly know in my parenting career, as I moved through different forms of workforce and provided in different ways, I felt like I wanted to spend more time with the kids. I felt like in our life I was missing out on something. I felt like I sacrificed stuff for my partner at the time. I still feel that way now. I've got a 10, 11-year-old, and I feel like by my work, by my provision of security financially for the family, I sacrifice a lot for her. And I wouldn't mind having some of that. You know, so I think you've got to take into account that men, to a degree, as part of the culture, set themselves up. What's happening in the family court is a motherhood preference, and it's happening in our community. Our community has a motherhood preference. Our community expects mothers to be the primary carers of their children, and for some mothers that's a burden. And I'm sure these are mums who have not have their children residing with them.
Well, that's what I said. I think it's because we fail.
Exactly.
Or I think we're conditioned. I grew up in an era when the man was the breadwinner and he went out to work and the mother was the homemaker and looked after the children. And I'm not saying that's the perfect way to do it, but that's how we were conditioned. Men were the protectors, the providers, and women were the nurturers. So it's difficult for us to use these laws and say, well, I want the kids now.
Well, that's right. But there's been a generational change as well, because
the modern
blokes are far more inclined to want to form a meaningful relationship with their children than perhaps their fathers or their grandparents were prepared to. I look at my father. I mean, I had a great relationship with my father. My parents stayed together, but he was always a fairly distant figure. He was always off at work, and my mum was there at home. And, you know, he was out of the house. He didn't seem to take that much interest in us kids.
Yeah. Yep.
Whereas myself, I mean, I think I take far more interest in my son than my father took in me.
And
it's definitely been a generational change.
Yes.
Some of that change, though, has been a generational change in outcomes, Ian. I don't think we've changed the culture. I think we still condition young men that way.
Exactly.
What's happened is seen through the eyes of generativity. I grew up in an era where I looked at my dad and thought, I saw my father die. And I heard him say, I wish I had spent more time with my kids. He didn't say to me, I wish I had earned another million. I wish I had
spent more.
I wish I had, you know, a red Ferrari. I wish I had a pair of red socks when I was 27 instead of 44. He didn't talk to me about those things that he had in his life or missed out on. He talked to me about his relationships. And I saw in him, as in the last months and years of his life, a deep sadness. And I've seen it in a lot of my friends' fathers that I've been close to as well. So I think generativity, we've grown up, we've seen that certainly my generation and said, gee, my dad wasn't all that happy with that. I want something different. However, the cornerstones of our culture are still teaching our young men to be the same men from your generation.
Yeah, exactly. However, I see part of the problem as being the fact that we allow one parent to become a custodial parent and the other a visiting parent.
But a lot of that is
practicality.
And
that's where it stems from.
But, I mean, a lot of that is it's impractical. The idea that, you know, that a man can have 50% custody of a child.
No, I'm not talking 50%, because that varies. Some people, that's right. It's often not convenient. But the fact that you can allow each parent to have a percentage of parenting time, whatever they agree on.
Yep. Whatever works for them.
You know, but whatever works for them. But it's as long as the court orders don't say one is the custodial parent and the other one is the
assistant parent.
Assistant parent or visiting parent or whatever. And this gives all the power to the custodial parent at present.
Yeah.
And we, of course, we see all the ongoing problems that come from that, the parental alienation that occurs. We have child support issues. There's and of course the most used tactic to dislodge you from your children is the domestic violence allegations.
Absolutely.
And then there's but on top of all that, once you've got a court order that you may have spent $60,000 in obtaining, there's no non-compliance provisions. So if the custodial parent begin, because one's given the custody, if the custodial parents decide not to abide by the court orders, then you've got to go back to court.
Yeah, and you've got to become the prosecutor. You know, very, very difficult to do without legal aid. Very difficult to prosecute a contravention without legal aid.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what most non-custodial parents walk away. And of course, these mothers find themselves exactly in the same spot because some men are saying, well, look, if that's what I'm going to get in the court, let's make a preemptive first strike, and they get advised by their lawyers. You know, whoever makes a preemptive first strike can make accusations of abuse, and these women have experienced that. They were abused because it's not important whether it's factual or not, because it separates them from the children, and if the allegations are later found to be false, it doesn't matter. There's no penalty
no
for that, but they've got the kids. Yeah. And the judge comes along with a rubber stamp and says, we'll accept the status quo because it's the parenting arrangements that's been enforced now for 12 months. We don't want to upset the kids. Bang. And the kids stay with the most dysfunctional of their parents.
Yeah. Well, look, we better go to a track here, and we'll be back with our first guest.
Diana.
Yes, after this track, after this short break.
Wasted kisses, red turns to blue. My kisses were wasted on you. Wasted hours and wasted pursuit. I was wasting my time picking the wrong fruit. The storm clouds opened. Down came the rain. Everything I thought was precious went down the drain. Wasted promises, wasted lies, wasted kisses, wasted goodbyes. Wasted kisses, red turns to blue. My kisses were wasted on you. Wasted hours and wasted pursuit. I was wasting my time picking the wrong fruit. Here today, gone tomorrow. The only thing that's left of value is sorrow. Wasted kisses, a big wasted mess. We were wasted, I confess. Yeah, we were wasted, baby, wasted. Wasting all my time and all my kisses on you. Wasted, baby, wasted. Wasting all my time and all my kisses on you. Yeah, we were wasted, baby, wasted. Wasting all my time and all my kisses on you. Yeah, we were wasted, baby, wasted. Wasting all my time and all my kisses on you. The story has ended. The plot has run out. The paper was wasted. Just writing it down. Everything wasted. Wasted for miles. Wasted lives, wasted smiles. Wasted kisses, red turns to blue. My kisses were wasted on you. Wasted hours and wasted pursuit. I was wasting my time picking the wrong fruit.
We were wasted,
wasted kisses, red turns to blue. My kisses were wasted on you. Wasted pursuit. I was wasting my time thinking the wrong fruit. Wasted kisses, red turns to blue.
kisses were wasted on you. Wasted hours, wasted pursuit hours, wasted my time picking the wrong fruit. Wasted kisses, wasted.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And you're listening to Dad's on the Air. My name's Peter Vandervoort, and our first guest this week is Diane. Not her real name for legal reasons. She's a mother of three who's lost contact with two of her three children as a result of her ex-partner being able to manipulate the current family justice system. She's also the founder and spokesperson for Parental Alienation Australia. Diane, welcome to the program.
Hi, Peter, and thanks for inviting me to your wonderful program.
Welcome back, I should have said, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a while. But we've been very busy nonetheless.
Absolutely. Well, that keeps us out of mischief.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? All this research.
Absolutely, and you've been very active in the parental alienation. Of course, that's your blog name. And everything. So, what I was going to say, Diane, what do you say to those that still claim parental alienation doesn't exist?
For me, it's a non-argument. I don't want to be drawn into some argument if it exists or not. It absolutely exists. There is overwhelming evidence all around the world that exists, and the very fact that our legal system, our family court, our family justice system is an adversarial system, and that actually facilitates the process of alienation, and I won't be talked out of that at all, because I'm speaking. From firstly my own experience of the family court system and my disbelief, and as a consequence of that, then my ongoing research and my ongoing talking with parents that seek me out and understand that they have been alienated from their children and they just sort of don't know what the heck happened and where and why, and a bit shell shocked. And trying to understand it, and a lot of parents even feel responsible for a lot of it, and it isn't until, there's some, a lot of understanding and insight of the condition that they realise, no, they're not a bad parent, the system allows this to happen.
That's the problem, though, isn't it, to convince the people that haven't yet experienced it and to try and win over or to get them to believe that parental alienation exists. Diane, how was your ex-partner able to manipulate the system so easily?
Well, it's still, reflecting on it, it still totally shocks me. And in our case, before I was physically thrown from the family house, I signed the house over to my former partner, and he had everything in it, so there was no need to fight about any of that sort of stuff. But I was very aware of his character, and I wasn't going to willingly hand my children over, my life,
Yes.
So that's what I did. And as I said, I was physically thrown from the house, and then it was just this constant, they don't want to see you. Well, I just knew that wasn't correct. I understood that, it was difficult. They were upset because of the breakdown and all that sort of stuff. So you can tolerate that for a short period of time for everybody to do a bit of adjusting and, a bit of meltdown happening and stuff. But I would not accept the continued refusal of my children to speak to me whenever I called or you know, wanted to make contact. That wasn't, that's not normal.
And he was just able to do that.
So he was able to do that.
And no doubt telling the children that you weren't trying to contact them.
Oh, well, and as far as he was concerned, and I mean, I wasn't there to hear every message that he delivered, but, you know, I was the fault and the blame why the family unit was no longer the perfect family unit that it was. You know, so he was attributing, you know, all the blame for the destruction of our family or the breakdown on our family, you know, to myself, to the mum. It was mum's fault.
And he was able to get away with separating you from your children by alleging sexual abuse on your behalf.
Yeah, so as I said, you know, I wasn't going to accept that my children didn't want to see me. There was no reason on the face of the earth why my children would be refusing contact, you know. Mm-hmm. I know my heart and I know my history with my children, you know. I'm the expert when it comes to my children, you know, and what went on in our home, you know. No one else was there, you know. I know what happened. And anyway, so I signed the property and things over, and then when I did not accept that the children didn't want to see me, then of course I went and I went to the women's services firstly, when they just advised me very, very strongly to go seek legal advice as soon as possible. Otherwise I'd be being, you know, accused of abandoning my children, and I'm like abandoning my children. I haven't abandoned them.
Yes.
I've been tossed out of my home. You know, I was afraid for quite some time, was even, you know, didn't even want to go out of the house type of thing. Then I go to the legal, you know, to the women's services, who, one of their, you know, first thing, you know, do you have legal legal advice? No, I don't. Then please get yourself, you know, to some legal advice as quickly as humanly possible. Otherwise, you will be being accused of abandoning your children. Well, okay, fair enough. So I went and got myself a lawyer, told him my story, and he was like, well, you know, we live in a Western society and you don't sort of, you're not going to be treated like that, and that's just not on, you know. We'll put an application in for your contact with your children, and, you know, and that's how the process of becoming, you know, involved in the court took place. And so then my, you know, partner was served with, you know, papers saying that we were going to be proceeding to court to sort the matter out in court, because it was obvious that sorting the matter out with him personally wasn't a very, you know, equitable sort of way of dealing with it, actually. You don't just toss mum out of the house and she never wants to see her children again. That's just not on.
Now, these allegations of sexual abuse were later found to be false.
Yeah, they were.
Was he ever punished for his perjury?
No, not ever punished. And so, okay, the allegations of sexual abuse were made. So when somebody makes allegations of sexual abuse, first port of call is docs. And then...
From your children.
Sorry?
You were then separated from your children too.
Yeah, I was separated from my children, because in this process, you know, well, first of all, you've got to go to the police station. You know, well, what he did was went to the police station, you know, and made allegations there. And so he got his AVO. And then, you know, then docs was involved, and then docs further reporting involves bringing in, you know, police, a juvenile investigation, like for children, and they were brought in, and it was quite, you know, the docs, you know, they just did what they did, but once they brought in their expert, you know, their specialist people, it was quite evident to these people who work with, you know, this sort of, you know with sexual abuse, like, or, you know, alleged sexual abuse. So these people investigate, you know, allegations of sexual abuse. Now, in a very, very short period of time, and I know that because, you know, I spoke to these people after that it was quite evident to them that the child was being put up to scripted lines by her father, and when the father wasn't being believed in front of these specialist people, he got really quite angry with them as well. So it was an obvious case for them that, you know, the father was using a child to make false allegations of sexual abuse, and it was very concerning for the police investigating, you know, the matter, that this was actually the case. So that was their findings.
So the judge and the various bureaucracies were aware that his behaviour was malicious, and it was
absolutely.
He was committing perjury.
Absolutely, and I have in every place in this country where we believe that, you know, they protect the children's best interests, you know, like doctors, police, this, you know, the places like that. And in, indeed, the family court, it's all documented that the risk of harm to the children, it comes from the father.
But the children were left with the father.
They were left with the father under the banner of children's wishes.
Yes.
And it was, even though in the final judgment it said that these wishes were the evil whispers of the father, nonetheless, the children's wishes at this time were to remain living with their father. The judge didn't give him custody of the children, but they could live there if that's what they wanted to do, because that was apparently their wishes.
What about, what was there any directions from the court as to what contact they may have with you?
Well, after the... Well, they just left for the children to decide.
But the end result is that they don't contact you. Is that,
well,
is that correct?
Exactly.
So what recourse do you have now that your case has been dealt with by the courts and that they live with their father, you don't see them anymore? Where do you go from here? What recourse do you have?
Well, I could have appealed, the judge's the decision. And the fact that I think my judgment was very, very opening, you know, that if I had have made it a case and took it, you know, back for an appeal, that, highly likely that I would have won. But the argument was, what I kept getting told wherever I went, because I was very keen to appeal it. Like, as I said, my judgment was just, our case was cited as an extreme case of parental alienation.
Yes.
And as the judge said in his closing to the court,
he recognised parental alienation.
The judge actually said that he'd just been off to a conference in regards to parental alienation. He had been somewhat of a sceptic on the whole subject. He was a bit scratching his head about the whole concept. But he said after our case, he would never be a sceptic again, and his eyes were wide open. But unfortunately, in our case, there was nothing he could do. He wished. I mean, I've got a judgment where, the judge wishes he could change my situation, but he's only can offer me time. Time will bring my children back. But, you know, I know, and knowing his personality and all that I research about parental alienation, you don't stop the alienator. The alienation will continue. You know, they will continue their tactics, the alienator will continue their tactics throughout the child's life for as long as they possibly can.
Yes.
And it mightn't be until that child, say, marries and
becomes independent enough.
Influence, yep, comes in their life and goes, you know what, you know, you're being told a bit of a, you know, you need to have your eyes, you know, opened up.
Yes.
What you're being told or what you believe isn't, you know, isn't the case. And then some, you know, some, who knows what can be the trigger that can sort of wake these children up, sort of from, you know, believing every single thing that, you know, the alienator
has indoctrinated.
Yep. That's right.
Now, as you're probably aware, there's proposed family law amendments before Parliament at this time, which will make it even easier for a perjurer
Absolutely.
To make false allegations by taking away penalties for perjury.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about it as a victim of perjury?
Well, you'll be a victim again if you go to the family law courts. You know, look, I've really been following this, and I'm, you know, researching, and I'm, you know, looking at what they're trying to do, but I'm going, hey, guys, you're missing the point. The point is that, you know, like as they say, the Australian Institute of Family said that shared care only works with parents where there's little conflict, where there's cooperation and where they live together, so that, you know, in the best interest of their children, they can come to some agreement post-separation to, you know, to have contact with their children, as it should be. Okay, so when you're dealing with people that don't want to share and who are angry and revengeful at the breakdown of their family, then they can use the system very, very easily.
Yes.
To make false allegations, and all I see that they've done by amending, you know, with when you say in regards to family violence, they've just made that even even a bigger family violence. The definition of family violence has just got so much bigger, because you can just allege threats of violence. Like, you can just say, look, like, at the moment we're meant to go to mediation first, but you can mediation by saying, no, there's family violence. So then you go straight to the lawyer and say, family, okay, well, so what's the family violence? What is it? And you might say, or the lawyer might go, well, oh, that doesn't seem really violent. So you have to then, you know, find, I mean, it's very easy to, you know, find a situation or an incident that happened and embellish it, exaggerate it, or just outright lie. You want violence here. How much violence do you need? Sexual abuse? Great, I'll add that one in too. That'll keep her away for, you know, or him away for a long time. And that's just how it is.
Well, they can add anything because it doesn't matter. They don't get punished for the false allegations anyway.
I mean, you know, in my case, you know, like my former partner sat in a, you know, in a lawyer's office, and this is an extremely expensive lawyer's office in Brisbane, and sat there for 7 hours to do an affidavit, and the only truthful thing in that affidavit was she makes the best banana cake in the world. I had to laugh when I read it. His only acknowledgement, and you know, of me doing anything good in his or the children's life, and all the rest was nothing but fabrication.
Do you have any advice for other people who find themselves in this situation where they have got somebody who's blatantly lying to keep them away from their children? I mean, having gone through it yourself...
Go to the police. If your former partner's saying that, you know, that alleging sexual or physical abuse, you go straight to the police station. That's what I tell anybody that comes to me. I say, you don't go anywhere near the family court. You'll get into this pit of... You know, how big can the story get? You know, how, like, it's just amazing the nonsense that can go on there. So if someone's, you know, really, you know, if someone's claiming, you know, allegations of sexual abuse, then first port of call, go to the police station.
And make a counterclaim.
Get it sorted out there. And then once they've found out what's happened in, you know, in the civil courts, then you take those findings to the family court. But having said that, all this takes time.
And money.
Exhaustion and proving your innocence. Like, it's like you're guilty until proven innocent as well.
And while you're fighting all that, your kids are being alienated.
You're disbelieving, you know, that people aren't even believing you. How can they possibly think that I did? I don't even want to go there because it can do your head in. This can do your head in. And I had a lawyer said to me once, I don't understand why... You know, men's suicide. You know, if they're only fault, if the allegations aren't true, and I said, if they're true or not, like people treat you, the society treats you, where there's allegations, and nothing's even been, it's only a story being put out there. You know, society's something's gone on there. You know, it's like terrible. As I said, I didn't want to buy into all that stuff. I was strong in myself, knowing you know what I had and hadn't done. You know what I mean? So this gave me, you know, the strength to do what I need to do. But it's so emotionally exhaustive. It's so emotionally exhaustive and financially exhaustive. And wrong. Wrong.
We totally agree. We've seen so many men
wrong.
Go through the same...
And then men suicide. You know, of course they suicide. You know, and as I said, for a man, you know, generally, you know, when there's accusations of sexual abuse against a man, you know... I know how it felt as a woman. You know, there's a little bit of a doubt, but when it's put against a man, you know, it's like, you know, like people just think that it's happened, you know. And then, you know, the man's feeling like that and feeling wherever he goes that he's potentially a child molester. And it all gets a bit, you know, hard to bear. And if I can understand fully why people suicide. I want to be here to tell my story. That's why I didn't suicide. Because, you know, there's been times where I couldn't deal with it either. It's just like the most hideous and cruelest thing that somebody can allege, and especially if you didn't do it, and especially if you love and care for your children and would never harm a hair on their body.
Absolutely.
And someone, you doing it maliciously. Look at me. My body is full of emotion from this. It's a very, very cruel thing to do.
And I'm sure
a lot of people think that that's okay. As long as you get your kids in the end, it doesn't matter. No.
But I'm sure there's a lot of other mothers listening today as well who will listen to your story and say, gee, that's happened to me.
Yes.
Where,
it's not sexual abuse. They can say the mother's mad, or yes, she's a drug addict, or she's a psycho, yes, or she's a crazy woman, or she's a whatever. And often the parent may look, in fact, like a person like that because they are so distraught and distressed that their children, they haven't got any contact with their children, A, and that they have to try and get people to believe their story, B, And, this is, this can, you can look like a very desperate person, which in fact you are, but not because you're a hopeless case or something, or because you're a bad parent,
Diane, we're almost out of time. If other mothers want to contact you, do you have a website or any contact details that you can direct us to?
Yes, just www.parentalalienationaustralia.
One word?
Yes, .blogspot.com. And this is the other thing, because of, I talk to you as Diana, and people go searching for me and they go, oh, I can't find you. And then I have to explain that not only do these things happen to you, then you're not even allowed to talk about them.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And all these privacy and all these issues, the alienating parent loves all this stuff, loves it. It works all to their advantage. So, unfortunately, I have to speak to you as Diana. That is not my real name.
Exactly.
And I'd like to be able to give you another site where you could directly email me, and I give permission to anybody listening to this show, if they want my contact details, from you after the show is finished, them.
Okay.
You can hand them out.
They can contact dotafeedback@gmail.com, and I'll get the,
yes,
we'll pass on the details.
If they do want to contact me, because that's how people do still find me, and even if I just can listen, I do whatever I can any time, day or night, because I know what it feels like to be a parent and no one's there for you, And in those darkest hours is when people, do things like suicide,
Yes,
so any time,
absolutely,
day or night, if you want to know something. But my advice, any allegations of sexual or physical abuse, straight to the police station, get them sorted. Don't let them tell you to go away. Don't let them tell you to go away. No, stay firm there, sort it out. And then often this is enough, maybe for some parents, they might even back down and go, this is getting a bit scary and hairy, and they might back down. But if not, go there, that's what you do. And then the family courts.
Diane, we've got another mother chafing at the bit, waiting to speak as well. It's okay. We thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today, and especially in order to let the community and our elected representatives know that mothers are also being dispossessed of their children in ever-increasing numbers due,
yes,
to the failings of intolerable, flawed family justice legislation.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
the way it's administered as well.
Mm-hmm, that's right, absolutely.
So thank you very much.
So in short answer to your question,
yep,
they have... The amendments have done nothing to fix this problem, it's only, I can only see it,
It's continuing. A backward step.
It is a backward
step. If anything.
It is a backward
all.
Step, yep. And it's very sad. And the thing is that people think that it's okay to do that as long as I get the children. Well, that's so not okay. It's so not okay. As I said, if you couldn't love your partner while you were living with them, you definitely have to try and get along and love each other in separation. This is in the best interest of your children.
On that note, we thank you very much, and we'll go to another break.
Thanks so much, Peter.
Thanks, Diane.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We are young. Demands. Love is a battle.
Welcome back to our special program on parental dispossession. Our next guest is one of those mothers, Hayley. And again, I say not her real name for legal reasons. Hayley's been separated from one of her two daughters for some time. Hayley is also the founder and spokesperson for Parental Alienation Central. Welcome to Dads on the Air, Hayley.
Hi, thank you.
Hayley, we were just speaking to another mother, Diane, and my first question to her was, because she's also involved with parental alienation, what do you say to those who claim parental alienation doesn't exist?
I'd ask them how long they've got and sit down and have a chat. I don't think I could say anything unless they had time for hearing about it.
Because and it's difficult for people who don't have an experience to even, it makes you wonder, how do you put that across? Because eventually you have to try and persuade the silent majority of what is going on. So it is probably important that we learn good ways to bring it across, I guess.
You mean putting it across to people...
Non-believers?
Don't...
Who poo-hoo the idea of parental alienation?
Yeah, well, I find in my personal world it's more about people that just don't know anything about it because they haven't experienced it or heard of someone that's experienced it. But I don't personally... I know there are detractors, yes. But that's more on the internet than in my face-to-face, to someone into it, yeah.
Now, Hayley, as I understand it, you have two daughters, one of whom lives with you and the other one with her father.
Yes.
As a result, you've subsequently found yourself being alienated from the daughter that lives with her father. Could you tell us a little as to how he was able to induce such alienating behaviour in your daughter?
Very, very clever, manipulating man. He spent a lot of years doing it from around four until I left when she was about six and a half. But I wasn't aware of it at that stage. So there was a lot of time and working on her during those stages and creating trouble between us, because he knew I wanted to leave him and he didn't want me to, and that's my understanding of it. So to manipulate a child is so easy. And especially when my daughter and I were very, very close, but I was also extremely supportive of their relationship, because openly he was loving and emotionally expressive to her, and it's not something I experienced. So I was very supportive of their relationship. So, you know, it was like I created this perfect place for him to do his work. So he wanted me to mentally go downhill. I was depressed because I wanted to leave him and trying to get out of that position and feeling guilty. He'd used emotional ploys to keep me there. Feeling sorry for him, I didn't want to hurt him, and it took a number of years before I did leave. So he was able to do a lot of work on my daughter, and I was suffering from her tantrums with me, which was helping my depression because I loved her so much and I could not get to the bottom of what was wrong with her. And so once I did leave, which was 4 years ago now, he upped it very, very strongly. And because it's subtle and it's emotional, it's very hard to point to and tell. Even your own family, my own family, didn't even understand it for one and a half years after I left. So you're alone in a lot of ways.
In your opinion, how much do you think the situation you find yourself in can be attributed to the way the system operates that allows that to happen?
Well, I guess there's the system of family court, and there's the system of, the Department of Human Services, and they both do not have the ability to cope with alienation tactics, and it requires really specialised, intervention, specialised interviews and assessing, and it's not there at all. So it's just, you know, if you come out being helped from alienation, then you're just, it's like you're lucky, I think, because they don't have the, and even in schools, Department of Education, they help the demise of parental alienation as well, unwittingly. But
yes, I was going to ask you about mention that. Also, so you feel the allegations, and you made counter allegations of abuse as well, didn't you? In your case,
well, I did have to down the track. Yes.
Do you feel any of these allegations were ever seriously addressed by the relevant agency? Then?
No, no. Well, I guess it started out that way because it did go to the JURT people. But once they got a hold of my ex's accusations, the stolen things from me that I used as evidence and the stories and how good a storyteller he is, they decided that they sort of, yeah, believed a whole lot of stuff that he was saying. And because, as Diane was saying earlier, that you do come across as, you feel crazy, you know, you're like,
yes, yes.
You're pulling your hair out and you want help. And I begged for Doc's intervention. I wanted their help and I went to them and I welcomed them very much to come and find out what's going on. But they didn't actually investigate what's going on. They made an assumption based on things that weren't from my side of things, and they ran with it very, very severely, and into the family court as well, and made some very, yeah. But it's ongoing with my case. But
what is the current position? Do each of your children have regular contact with both parents while the ongoing proceedings?
No, are in place? The young daughter I have sees her father and sister every fortnight for the last 2 years, supervised.
The daughter that lives with you, she has regular contact with her father.
Yes, yes. I've been desperate to have her and have a lot more contact with her sibling, at least. Mm. And that was played around with by my ex as well. He wasn't keen on that. He's happy for the contact when he's there, but he wasn't supportive and helpful when it came to trying to organising some for just the girls.
And do you have any contact with the daughter that lives with your ex?
No, no. She went to live with him. I handed her to him. She's never been removed from me by anyone, and nor has there been a court order to stop her from seeing me. But she's always been there for 3 years, and in the last 2 years, I've had no contact, no supervised contact, no phone calls, no responses to gifts, loving letters, and that's all I can do now is just keep getting the odd letter through to her whenever I can. But no, I get zero contact, zero information, and again, as I said, the school is another problem, but I'm working with that, like I do with every corner of these problem.
Yes. Yeah, now, your ex took out the restraining order against you. How was that restraining order dealt with by the public education system at a primary school level in terms of you being able to obtain information on your daughter's schooling results?
Yes, they kind of, the AVO application was, my ex wanted me to be kept from the school, and that didn't happen, and I accepted it without admission undertaking only. So, and that was purely for the, you know, the mandatory things, not to stalk and harass. And basically the principal chose to not only listen to that, but to hold up the application for, you know, AVO to keep me from the school, and said that he believed he had to listen to both of those things. And so it, despite the fact that I had the AVO didn't stop me from going to the school. Family court orders allowed me to have it all access.
But the principal used the application for the order to stop you getting information on your daughter's school.
Yeah, from day one, amazing. He was as rude as anything. He, over the phone, wouldn't basically said, literally, I don't have to give you any information about any child at this school, which was my daughter. And I said, well, you know, he said, I don't know who you are. So I said, well, can I have a meeting with you? You know, I want to make sure she's you know, might be able to have access to a chaplain and to get a look around the school, because my ex had removed her, you know, from her other school and taken her to this new school. So, and he just kept saying, I don't have to give you any information about any child at the school, and proceeded to treat me like a leper and for the last 2 years. And I've had a slight, bit of change this year because a new principal is there.
Yes, I was going to say it's not across the board. Each principal seems to have have their own interpretation of the guidelines, I think.
Yeah, they do.
He obviously wasn't well aware.
They do have a little booklet on how to behave with regard to family court orders and family court issues, which I've read, but. He didn't. And just basic courtesy and respect is gone. And the fact that multiple orders actually went missing, I had to keep supplying them with as well. So, and I believe that's a common occurrence with men as well. I believe a lot of things I've experienced is common with men that have been cut out from their children and treated horrendously by schools and... suffer.
Hayley, no doubt you're aware of the proposed new round of family law amendments, which include, amongst other things, the redefining of domestic violence, the lifting of penalties for perjury, and the abolition of the friendly parent provision. Do you think this will in any way be helpful to warring parents?
No. No. I think people are trying to do the best they can. They're trying to fix a broken system that was never right in the first place.
That's right.
It's not really even fixing something that's broken.
Exactly.
It's like playing with junk in a junkyard.
Exactly.
Sorry, that might be a bit over the top, but...
Yes. Hayley, we're almost out of time. Now you're also active in the movement that's calling for recognition of parental alienation. Can you be contacted? Do you have a website that you're working with anybody?
Yes, I do. I have a website that's for Parental Alienation Central. I've created the website, and it's to try and bring target parents of parental alienation together across Australia, and so that each state can have a support and action group. It's about action. It's not just support group because we need to get action happening, and I have a register that I'm creating as well, so I'm very keen to
You're keen to hear from anybody that's suffering a similar predicament than yourself.
And they can answer a few questions and go on the register, and then as it grows, we've got some really good information to share with the powers that be.
And what is it called? What's the address?
The address is...
Parental Alienation Central, is it?
Well, that's the name of the site, but the address is Bringing Peace to Alienated Children. So it's Bringing Peace with the number 2, Alienated Children.
Yes.
.blogspot.com.
Okay, one more time.
So Bringing Peace, number 2, Alienated Children. .blogspot.com. So I'm also working with the Justice for Children group at the moment. I've just joined up with them, and we're trying to make a big difference to the children that are suffering and working. Yeah, but for me, it's very big. My site is about gender being gender neutral, and suffering parents and protective parents that are. Trying to make some serious changes against parents that are agenda-driven and doing harm. Yeah, so I really want to discriminate it that way as opposed to via gender.
Well said. Okay, Hayley, we have to move on. Unfortunately, we can go on all day, I'm sure. We thank you very much for joining us, and we wish you much success in your case and hope you join up with your other daughter shortly.
Oh, yes, me too. Thanks a lot for your time.
Okay, thank you, Hayley.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Parental alienation. Lisa's devastation through manipulation and intimidation is practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. One parent disappears by elimination through misinformation with lots of fabrication. Little brains are wired by constant stimulation against the other parent with great determination. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. No more expectation of parents' visitation. Nothing is now positive, only denigration. All attempted contact create a complication. Memories are erased with determined application. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. We don't see our children despite our protestation. The court will not act to help our situation. Dare to speak out, you invite recrimination, which destroys your reputation by nasty imputation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. This must be exposed, cause a revelation. And this is child abuse, a cruel abomination. The courts must stand up to save their reputation. Eliminate this practice of parental alienation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air. And welcome back. You're listening to Dads on the Air. Peter Vandervoort with you. And our next guest is a mother fighting hard to remain in contact with her three children, all of whom currently live with their father. Marissa, and that's not her real name again for legal reasons, joins us today to give us her views on a system that has done so much damage to her relationship with her children. Marissa, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Peter. Thank you.
Marissa, can you briefly explain to our listeners what your current position is in relation to having contact with your three children?
Mine's pretty much as bad as you can get. I have an order from the family court and an order in the local court restraining me from all contact and communication by any means with my children. And obviously it's a jailable offence if I breach that.
Not a good position to be in. And unfortunately, you join an army of men who are in the same position as well.
Absolutely.
And a lot of women, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Do you see the current family justice system as being particularly helpful or beneficial to separating parents and their children?
Oh, absolutely not.
It was a bit of a loaded question, I suppose.
It is, as far as my situation and so many... It's a court-assisted parental alienation that's happening. It's kind of overtaken the abusive, toxic partner that you're, or parent that you're dealing with, and really that person can't get very far unless they have the support of the court.
So you think the family court and the family justice system sets up a platform to allow an alienating parent to turn the children against their other parent?
I just think it's in the best interest of the court at the moment, because you can keep things going in the court. You know, it allows lawyers to keep going. You know, set the two parents aside and on different sides and get them to fight. And yeah, it's just it's.
Did you find your situation becoming more entrenched, and did it go backwards once you got the court involved, or was it already pretty bad, you think?
It's because of the court that my situation has ended up how it has, as bad as it can get. Yeah, my children were actually taken by federal police, and this is after I had... an AVO against my ex, and everything was basically turned around on me. I didn't breach any orders. I was the custodial parent at the time, and suddenly,
You were the custodial parent to start off with.
Absolutely, I was the custodial parent. I had the. The kids full time.
The court had given you that order, the orders for that, or?
Well, it started out that was consent orders. After I separated, it was going to be no other way because I'd always taken full time care of the children anyway. Mm. And during the year that they were taken, I had AVOs, and there was actually two breaches the week my children were taken, and I took them to a hotel. A five-star hotel to kind of give them a break from what they'd experienced. And we were in a hotel room and I got a knock at the door and six federal police came barging in and basically restrained me and took my kids away, and they were gone within seconds, and that was it.
And you had legal custody of him?
I had legal custody, yep.
So how was he able to do that? What did he actually do?
And this is why I say it's the court that is the problem, not actually the toxic partner or the abusive partner or parent, because they can't get very far. He just went on the morning, or the day before, I didn't realise. He'd gone to the family court and put in an affidavit saying that I was crazy and that I, just a whole lot of lies about me, and got a date for the next morning to have it heard. And it went up against a registrar, and the registrar said, well, maybe... Come back on Monday and see what's happening over the weekend. She just shut it out, and then he didn't like that, so he went to a judge, and the judge made a recovery order instantly.
It was as easy as that.
It was as easy as that, and I got the transcript, so I know what actually went on as well.
And he's still got the kids now, and they're only young children, are they? Or?
Well, at the time, I had a 3-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 12-year-old. And unfortunately, now my son's an adult. I missed out on his whole teenage years.
Yes.
So
So yeah. How has this impacted on your emotional health and well-being and that of your children, you think?
Well, as far as me, it's a full-time job. It has been a 24/7 job just to keep it together.
Yes.
But my fight in it is that I will make sure that I'm, you know, emotionally stable, because when my kids come home, they're going to need me.
Yes.
And my kids, I mean, I'm hoping that the post-traumatic stress that they've suffered from the federal police incident has kind of protected their emotions, and they're blocked. That's what I'm hoping, because there's nothing they can do about it.
Yes. Do you feel frustrated at all by the lack of community appreciation of what's really happening to separating families?
Absolutely, because, I mean, I've lost everyone in this. I've lost every friend and family member through this. I just have one friend left in the world. And it's because most people think if a judge of a family court can make an order that's so extreme, then you must have done something wrong. And you get alienated yourself in it.
That's right. What help and support, if any, is provided by the community for mothers alienated from their children?
There's none.
There's none for
mothers?
There's
none as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, I have just aligned myself with Justice for Children and found some other parents. I don't like to say that this is a gender-based problem. I have so many friends on my Facebook that are men and men's rights.
Exactly.
You know, we're all going through this together, yes. And it is the same tactics.
Yes, yes.
But again, people are very scared of authority, and so they'd rather kind of not support than support.
Do you in any way see how the family court's handling of custody matters can ever be viewed as being in the best interest of the children then?
It's just not. It's just not. And I think when also I really disagree with having financial matters in the same arena as children's matters. I think it should be a separate court, because that's kind of, it gets intertwined. That's how mine kind of started. And so it really just needs to have a whole overhaul and align with the true intention of what the court is actually wanting to do for children.
Yes. So you've been separated from three of your children under the current laws.
Yeah.
Of course, you're aware that there's new proposed family law amendments before Parliament, which include the redefining of what constitutes domestic violence. And there's also the abolition of the friendly parent provision and the elimination of penalties for perjury. Do you think any of these changes are going to be particularly helpful to the best interest of the children for separated parents?
I think it's a start to actually have a broader definition of abuse, because I think it was seen as just physical and sexual abuse, which, you know, obviously, but to look at the emotional abuse and you know, the psychological and neglect, I think is a big step.
But isn't it going to make it easier for a perjurer to allege? He or she has a wider field to choose from.
Absolutely.
To make false allegations. So isn't it in a way counterproductive to widen the definition?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to start looking at the history of both parents.
Yes.
And the full history, and yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying.
You know, in one way, yes, it's good to get the emotional side of abuse better recognised, but it's such a grey area. How do you define emotional abuse? You know, that's not very clear either. But if it makes it very easy to just make an allegation or feel threatened, just on the basis of a perceived threat, you can be separated from your children. And so the wider the choices, we feel, or most people seem to feel, that it's going to make it worse.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think I'm actually trying to get my case aligned first with Section 60B, and then pose the argument if they're still going to throw the false accusations that I could, you know, harm the children in any way, is to have, you know, some type of still supervised access.
Yes.
With a professional who can you know, they've got to start meeting us halfway.
They've got to protect the relationship with both parents while
absolutely.
The allegations are dealt with, aren't
absolutely.
They?
Absolutely,
that's right.
And if that
exactly.
means if that means supervised, then
yes.
fine.
It's better than nothing.
It's better than nothing,
yep.
and
yep.
and it's more important for children to continue a relationship with a parent.
Yep.
Hi, Marissa. It's Ray Lenton here. Can I just add to that? That I guess for those people who are legitimately abusing their children via a variety of means, even when that is real and is happening, they should still have, or their children should still have, the right to know who they are and have some form of contact with them, even if it is supervised.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would agree with that.
100%. And
absolutely.
I think if the court, and this is what I'm really pushing at the moment with my case, is to align with Section 60B first, their own law, and then work with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well said.
Marissa, this whole experience no doubt has lit a fire in your belly that will not be easily extinguished, like most of us. Have you linked up with any other groups of like-minded people, and what do you think needs to be done to make the whole experience more just and equitable and provide a better outcome for the children?
Look, I'm kind of worldwide. I've got a lot of followers worldwide.
Yes.
I intend to set a precedent in the Australian court, and I won't stop until I have, which I want to expand into the world.
Yes.
I just think we have it's happening so much, and to so many, and to so many all around the world, that I think if the alienated parents and the victims of this actually speak out like we are, that we're quite an army, quite a powerful army.
Absolutely, yes,
and,
millions.
And at the end of the day, the court has boundaries, and they actually have to align themselves with keeping a meaningful relationship with both parents. That's the law that they set.
Yes.
So if we make them accountable for that, then we take our power back, and we ask them to, can you please, you know, to protect our children, protect our children's needs. And the rights of their own law that they set. That's the thing. They're actually violating their own law by doing what they're doing.
It's our elected representatives who ultimately will be are responsible for policy change and the drafting of more equitable legislation. What would you like to say if you were addressing them, or to try and get more appropriate laws? What would be your first things you'd say to them?
Oh, gosh. It's just...
What's the biggest change that needs to come about, you know, first, before anything else?
I think first the kids' needs and rights need to come first. And the love of a parent, you know, has nothing to do with anything else, and I think kids need the love of both parents,
mm-hmm.
And they need to have a relationship with both parents. So unless obviously that it genuinely is unhealthy and abusive, then absolutely the laws that they have should protect children from that. But I think maybe. I think maybe they need to start looking at the children.
Well, of course, they all say they do everything on the basis of the best interest of the children. Both sides, all sides say, well, we're doing this for the best interest of our children. But I think what you just said a while ago, we should protect the relationship that the children have with both parents while allegations have been made, because that's that time that the kids are separated from one or other, the parent is used to cause all the problem.
Absolutely.
And I think even when it is proved, you know, children have a right, an inalienable right, in my view, under Section 60B, to experience their parents as they are. And unless you, you know, if you've got professionals in the room that are supervising contact with an abusive parent either side of the gender divide, then that can be managed and children can grow to come to understand what is happening for that parent and will make their own choices as they grow up. But they still need to. I have met many children who've grown up alienated from one parent or the other, and they live in dream world about what that parent's really like because they never really experienced them. So even where they are somewhat abusive, there would obviously be extremes where it wouldn't be possible. However, they would be self-determining, not determined by a judge in a courtroom who's never met the children. And that's right. The thing that bothers me is that we just don't properly understand that inalienable right and provide process for children to be able to experience their parents as they are.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also children question, you know, does my mum or dad love me? Do they think about
me? Absolutely, they do. Yeah.
You know, and that's just a normal thing. If they're not, then they mustn't, you know, and it's easy to believe the parent that they're with, you know, because they don't see the other parents, so they come to their own conclusions. It must be because they don't love me,
exactly.
They don't want me, they don't care about me.
Absolutely.
And that's why I've also, you know, made a website for my kids, and I speak to them, you know, indirectly, I guess, because of my restrictions.
How old are your children now?
18, 14 and 8.
Okay, so they'll be surfing the net?
Absolutely, and that's the greatest thing about the internet.
Isn't it?
Kids are very curious.
Yes.
And even, you know, people that have children have been adopted, they always want to find their parent.
Absolutely.
Yeah? So I know that, and they want to find the answers. Kids want to find the answers.
Yes.
So I would say to any parents out there, make a website, you know, it's really easy, and just start sending messages, you know, and it will get out there.
Marissa, there's no doubt a lot of other mothers in a similar position than yourself, and we're almost out of time. If anybody would like to get in contact with you, where can they find details? Are you associated with anyone else's website, perhaps, or with a website? Can you give us some details on that?
Yep, there's two. There's Vanessa Garnett, Garnett, .webs.com.
Yep, and the other one?
And the other one is the same on Facebook.
Okay, Vanessa Garnett, .webs.
.com, yep.
Webs with an S.
Yes.
.com, okay.
And if you look up Vanessa Garnett on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marissa, thank you so much for joining us, and we wish you every success that you wish yourself in your campaign for justice.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you, Marissa.
Good luck, Marissa.
Thank you.
No, I can't forget this evening or your faces you were leaving, but I guess that's just the way the story goes. You always smile, but in your eyes your sorrow shows. Yes, it shows. No, I can't forget tomorrow when I think of all my sorrow. Well, I had you there, but then I let you go. Now it's only fair that I should let you know what you should know. Oh, I can't live if living is without you. I can't live, I can't give any. This evening, or your faces you were leaving, but
that's just the way the story goes. You always smile, but in your eyes your sorrow shows. Yes, it shows.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And we're back. Amazing how quick time goes. We were hoping to speak with a father who just spent 6 months in jail as well for trying to contact his daughter. And just via a friend, he left a message to say that I love you. And they threw him in jail for 6 months, amongst other things, no doubt. But anyway, we hope to get him on the program next week where we have a bit more time. What do you think of that, Ray? What do you think of all these mothers that have also been dispossessed? It's a bit of an eye-opener, isn't it? Because so many men think that it's only men being affected. But
and exactly right. And, you know, I look at the way our society operates, and often, you know, we use religion to explain wars. It's not about religion. It's about money and power. And we use the gender debate to mask up what's really going on.
And it's also about money and power.
Exactly. And, you know, it can be a hopeless message for men. If you think it's about gender, you've got to change a lot of people to change the circumstances. If it's about systems, there's hope in that. And I think it was interesting that on Q&A last night that Tony Windsor answered a question that was about systems and process, and he said the world's controlled by the people who turn up. So you've got to turn up. If you want things to change, you've got to turn up. And if men feel hopeless, they won't turn up. Women won't turn up. It's only if we've got hope and we're motivated that we think we can have an impact that we actually turn up. But, you know, Peter, I thought it was interesting for this reason, because I was reading an article in the Tuesday Australian, May 3rd, and I thought it was interesting that there's an article there that says the Chief Justice of the Family Court of Australia, Diana Bryant, agrees with our guest today. She thinks that the new laws will be a backward step. She thinks that the courts will just get clogged up again and will slow things down. The court does deal with family violence now, and they have very specific rules. If we want to enhance the way that they do that, make it easier for them, don't clog the courts up and give people an invitation to make false allegations when they're at their worst, when they're hurting.
Exactly.
And provide some process that will actually work and speed things up so that children who are subject to abuse.
And also, I think what Vanessa said was to ensure that the kids remain in contact, because when an allegation
exactly.
is made, aren't you supposed to be innocent until proven guilty?
Yes. And there are some vindictive people in the world who do all sorts of yes. things wrong. However,
we've got to protect children from a real
a lot,
violent.
We yeah. do. But a lot of people who are violent are scared. A lot of people who are violent don't understand the system or are in some emotional turmoil. And we need to apply care to these people as well. And so it's not just a matter of saying, well, that's it, you can't see your kids anymore, go home. Next channel, next chapter in your life. What do we do now? We forget about you. Next. I mean, we've got to provide some service for these people to assist them to heal where we can. And to identify those people that actually do need to be in a jail or do need to be locked out more effectively, because at the moment we wrap them all up into the same basket and we go, well, the easy way for our society is just to rub you out. And that's what they've got. They've got a big rubber and they just rub you out.
Well,
we're running out of time, people. We can go on all day, couldn't we?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, and that's it from Dads on the Air this week. We hope you enjoy the program, and we'd like to thank all our guests for their willingness to share their pain and frustration with us in such a public manner, and hope that those responsible will one day come to see the error of their ways. We thank you for listening, and from Ian...
Yep, and Peter and Ray, all of us here at Dads on the Air.
And we look forward to your company again next week.
We'll be back next week.
Stay focused, people. Stay at it. Turn up and be kind to each other.
We're Dads on the Air. We're here because we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're Dads on the Air. We're Dads on the Air.